Welcome to the Permatemp Corporation. A presentation of the audio podcast, This Is Actually Happening. Episode 39. What if you married someone after 10 days?
I just always loved traveling, and I used to model when I was younger, and so I earned quite a bit of money that I just kind of banked, and then I was just really lucky. I just had money. It never was an issue for me. I was just terribly lucky. I was never a drinker. I was like scared of drugs. I smoked pot once when I was like 18 and I thought I was going to die. And so like clean, I was high school valedictorian, like just lucky as hell. I was about 27 years old and I was going to school to be a nurse. And I was doing a lot of looking into the microscope. And I could never get it to focus. And I thought, oh, what the hell's wrong with the microscope? It was just really blurry at first. And I think, oh my God, I just need more coffee. I need more caffeine. My shoes are just fit wrong. You know, I need different shoes or maybe I just need glasses or, you know, it was always something really kind of, it just never occurred to me, you know, that it was something kind of major. And I eventually kind of went blind in one eye and then eventually was having a lot of numbness. When it wasn't going away and everything was getting worse, then I would kind of do some research on the internet, which was, I started to kind of freak out. And so I was just kind of making up things in my head of what could be going on. But it didn't really start getting scary until, until the doctors were getting scared. Over the course of the next few months, I was just diagnosed with MS. It kind of hit really hard, really quick for me. The more that I would read about MS and that finding, you know, there's no cure and most people end up crippled, kind of depending on the prognosis right away and depending on how your symptoms are right at the beginning, that kind of determines how you do in the long term. I remember having a really severe breakdown after leaving the doctor's office when on the street, just crying and crying. I don't want a degenerative neurological disease. I'm a traveler. I'm an explorer. It just didn't fit with my identity. It was like, this is not who I am. This is not possible. I was set up with an opportunity to have a free MRI, which was great. But then I went to the clinic to pick up the MRI results. And I was going to nursing school, so I felt like that I could sort of interpret something of what was going on, you know, just reading the very sort of black and white description of this brain that has a lot of damage and florid multiple sclerosis, they said. And then it really hit. I was like, oh, God. I was just like, that's not my brain they're talking about. That's not my brain. There's a couple different forms, maybe a few different forms. Relapsing remitting is what I was diagnosed with, and that's it. You'll have a like heavy hit hard with symptoms, and then you might have a period of remission where it just goes away for a while, and then you'll be hit hard again. And oftentimes, it might be a stressful event. They think that it's, what is that cause when your body's attacking itself? Autoimmune disease, that's what it is. And this is kind of a side note, but so when I was doing the modeling and I was kind of became anorexic, and in my mind, I just hated my body. You know, my mind was always attacking my body. And I felt like the MS, that was like a physical manifestation of like, so now my body's attacking my body. And they think that it's your immune system is attacking your nervous system. But basically the myelin sheath, which surrounds the nerves, it's kind of like the covering, like if you're thinking of an electrical cord, like the covering of the nerves is being damaged. And so it's basically like that plastic sheath around an electrical cord. And so the signals from your brain to different parts of your body, it's just not, they're not, firing properly. So when I had numbness in my legs, I couldn't feel my legs, but it's just like a faulty wiring, basically. And multiple sclerosis, it means many scars. And so you end up with these scars in your brain, like scar tissue, which can lead to, if they're kind of severe enough, they can lead to black holes, which cannot be healed. I went through a phase where I couldn't really walk, and that was terrifying. And I couldn't feel my feet. They were kind of like these stumps. And I couldn't feel, like, textures. I couldn't feel if something was wet or cold. And I couldn't even feel if I was holding a glass sometimes. And I just remember breaking so many dishes during that relapse because I couldn't feel. And I remember some homeless guy. I was walking down the street, and I was having a really hard time walking. And some homeless guy kind of yelled out at me. He was like, you walk like a man. You don't walk. You swear. You walk like a man. What's wrong with you? I just wanted to go crawl in a cave and not come out again. I just felt like, I don't know. I just felt, for some reason, that really, really hurt. So all these customers that I'm like trying to be nice to and friendly to and happy, and you have to have a good customer service. I just felt like, God, nobody knows. Wow, I really wanted to be so nice to everyone that I would encounter, just knowing that, like, I have no idea what this person's going through. Like, you just don't know. Like, anytime I would see someone in a wheelchair or like with a walker, I would always think, oh, they probably have MS. That's going to be me. More was just the fear of my future, that I was just didn't want anything to do with that future that I saw, you know, as being inevitable. Eventually, it did lead to a pretty severe depression where I truly, like, I just wanted to die. And anything that I could think of to do with my life, I would try to incorporate being a cripple. You know, so like, okay, well, I'll probably have to have a desk job. Okay, well, I can't do anything too stressful. Okay, well, like, it ruled out anything that I thought sounded interesting. I couldn't do anything that made me feel like myself. And so then I just thought to myself, I need to like do something that'll make, just kind of give me confidence again. Like, I'm going to go to Africa. And I had known this girl who had just died on a bus ride in Malawi. And it was very tragic, very, very tragic. And that had always been one of my biggest fears, because I would always love to travel alone. And so it was always really kind of a fear of mine that I would die on a bus and like no one would know me. Like, I'm just like, and then when a girl that I knew, that actually did happen to her, that truly became like, it just became more real. And so then it was like really one of my biggest fears. And I thought, you know what? I have to do this thing that I'm the most afraid of. It wasn't really my voice that gave me that idea necessarily. It just kind of felt like out of the blue. I was like, no, I have to do what I'm most afraid of in order to feel right. And also there was another part of me that was like, well, maybe I'll die. That sounds kind of nice. That sounds kind of nice at this point. If I were to die, for example, on a bus. And so I was like, all right, I'm just going to buy a ticket to Africa. But by the time I did eventually leave, it was a few months after I bought the flight. And I was able to walk fine. And I was starting to feel really good again. Like, really good. And I went to Zambia and Mozambique and Malawi. My first stop, it was in Maputo, the capital city, and I checked myself into this youth hostel. And as I was checking, you know, kind of doing the paperwork, a group of travelers entered at the same time. And there was one, like, truly just tall, dark, and handsome, and he had this beautiful voice, this beautiful accent. The heart pounding, and oh my God, I just couldn't believe it. He was just, like, so amazing. I just could not believe that this person, like, existed, and oh my God, we're in the same room together. How does this happen? Oh my God, he's funny, and he wants to make sure that I'm gonna go out to dinner with him tonight. And it was all like really kind of like, oh my God, I can't believe this is happening, you know. And I just developed this severe crush on this person, but we had only hung out like for, I don't know, 6 hours or something, and always in a huge group, you know. But then when I went home, then I still had this major crush on this person, and I thought about him like all throughout the rest of my trip. I was like, oh my, it was just a major crush. Just making up all these stories in my head about him, you know, based on these photos that I saw on Facebook. And we didn't really communicate too much. We were just kind of Facebook friends, you know, and I would just stalk him, you know, and make up stories in my head about him and believe them. And then at one point, though, he contacted me, and so the whole, we met in Mozambique, it was like January, and then October rolls, no, it was probably September rolls around, and he was living in Belgium at the time, and I was in Seattle, and he said, oh, I'm going to go to China over the Christmas holidays. You should come. You know, and we didn't really have, we didn't know each other at all. But then, yeah, suddenly he suggests China. And I'm like, oh, sure. I'll drop $1,200 on a flight to China to hang out with someone that I've spent 6 hours with, you know. So we met up in Beijing. And okay, so I should also mention that that summer, I found myself single. I think I was 30 or 31 or something. And I'd never really been single. I'd always had these sort of long-term relationships. So did the whole OkCupid thing. And I did not take it seriously. I thought it was kind of fun at first. I was like, oh, this is just kind of funny. And I was treating these like dates as like almost like interviews, because that's what they seemed like. And then I eventually met someone that I really liked. Saturday, we went out to brunch. And then Sunday he calls and, oh, would you like to hang out again? It was like totally casual. No, like truly like nothing really romantic, you know. And then in that conversation that came up, the MS, and I was finally at the point where I was okay telling people that I had MS. Because I wasn't having any symptoms. I was feeling good in my body. I wasn't taking the drugs anymore. I was kind of feeling like I was kind of in control of my health a little bit. Like, oh, okay, so after I mentioned to this guy that I had MS, and he calls me, and he was really nervous, and it was kind of funny, but he said, I have to tell you that I can't date you anymore, because 20 years from now, I don't want to have to take care of you, because I can't date you because of your MS. But I think you're really sweet, and if you want to be friends, you know, and I was pretty proud of myself, though. I just kind of took a deep breath, and I was like, you know, my friends don't see me as someone with MS. That's not even, like, that's not part of their thing with me. And clearly that's all you see in me is someone with MS. And so, you know, I don't need to be friends with you. And I was very kind of calm, cool, and collected on the phone with him, and then got off the phone, though. And then I kind of had a breakdown. Then all the fear came back. The MS fear, it came back. And I was like, okay, so now not only do I have this, like, shitty disease, and I also can't have a boyfriend, you know, just kind of feeling like damaged goods. No one's going to want to be with me because I have this disease. And, you know, and that he kind of planted that seed. And so then when I found myself in China with this dream guy that I had been, you know, severely crushing on over that past year, making up all these stories in my head about how amazing he was. So then we were sitting in some noodle shop in Beijing, and I just kind of told him the story about this person who didn't want to date me because I had MS, and he said, well, I don't care if you're ill. My stepdad has Parkinson's disease, and that, oh, it doesn't bother me at all. I don't care if you're ill. And so for me, I was like, what? You know, and there was like, I just felt like there were angels in the room, and, you know, there was just like harps playing. I was like, oh my God, this is amazing. This is just too good to be true. We had truly only spent like a few days together, but he was already talking about marriage. I was like, yeah, I'll marry this guy, you know? I went back to Seattle, he went back to Belgium, and he was still talking, and we would talk on Skype all the time. We'd have these long Skype dates. And then eventually when he was like, no, I'm going to, over the Easter holidays, I'm going to come to Seattle and meet your family and ask for your hand in marriage. He bought a ticket to Seattle, and then met my family, and everyone just loved him. Just like, oh my God, he looks just like George Clooney. And just like so, because everyone would just be like so like weak in the knees when he was around. Like, and so, I don't know. So like, we were all just kind of like, wow, this is amazing, you know? I don't know. Then when he asked me to marry him, and he took my hand, and he said, do you think we should get married? I think we should get married. Put this on your finger. And then he shoves this ring on my finger that was too small, and it had all these, like, frayed edges. It was almost like this tinny, like, all these, and it hurt like hell. And I was, like, starting to bleed. Like, it was, like, breaking the skin. And he was just pushing harder. And it was like, oh, my God. And I will say, when we were talking on Skype one night before he came, he said, "Are you the kind of slut that wants a diamond ring?" I couldn't believe that that was what he really thought. And he had such a beautiful voice and a beautiful accent that it always sounded kind of really sugar-coated. And so he would say these awful things, but, like, I didn't really believe that he was serious, you know? Over the course of that, like, few months between when he asked me to marry him and when I eventually moved to Brussels, we would talk on Skype, and there were times throughout that period where it was like, oh my God, like, who are you? But I still kind of just thought, okay, well, I kind of signed up for this. I'm just going to go and see what happens. Again, like, with the air of, like, the experiment, you know, like, well, I'm just going to kind of go see what happens. Kind of immediately, we were starting to have kind of, like, major fights. And I had never really been one to argue with boyfriends. I mean, you know, over small stuff, but never, like, screaming fights. But then eventually, you know, and then he would kind of turn really sweet. And we would kind of then make up. Like, I would wait for him to come home from work. I kind of felt like this, I don't know, recluse. And I hated Brussels with a passion. And so I didn't really want to go out. And then I started smoking pot a lot. If I would say something that he didn't like, or, like, he would have these, like, major, like, anger outbursts. And I remember one night I said something that he didn't like, and he took the chair. He had, you know, held it over his head and crashed it down on the table a million times and broke the chair. And it was terrifying. I was really scared of him. And I just remember I went in the bathroom, and put on my iPod, like, the volume as high as it could go, get be away from him. But I was scared. I just felt like a really small child. I just felt very, very scared. Then the next day, like, he would be fine. We wouldn't really talk about it. So then we came to the States. On the wedding day, I remember drinking a lot, and I was, like, I was pretty intoxicated, like, during the wedding. And I also noticed, like, I knew, the thing is, like, I always knew. I feel like I always had this feeling about him that it was wrong, that it was just, this is not okay. I just was not listening to my intuition. He kind of would tell me, "You're not really good for anything except modeling." I always kind of felt like he just wanted to be, he liked the idea of being married to a model, you know? Because I had expressed that, like, I hated that job with a passion. There's a reason why I left the industry. And I'm putting a lot of the blame on him. And I will say, you know, that, like, at any point I could have said, no, I'm not going to do that. But I just didn't really have a lot of self-esteem. I felt like shit about myself, and I'm damaged goods also. Like, here I have MS, you know, this is the only guy that would ever be with me, you know? And then he was starting to become abusive to me. Like, he would throw shit at me. And then eventually I did do this, had a job, a modeling job, and I went to Thailand for a month. And more, I was like, I just was thrilled to have a chance to be away from him. So at this point we'd been married a year. And so I was really excited to go to Thailand for a month. And eventually at one point I tripped down some, I fell down some stairs and I broke a rib. So my husband was in Bangkok at the time. And I just had this feeling, he's gonna get so angry when I tell him that I broke my rib. Like, I do not want to tell him, he's gonna be furious. And I eventually told him, and he lost his shit. He just lost it. How could you do this? You fucking cunt, how could you do this? You're never traveling alone again. It was just really, like, and I had enough, like, time away from him at that point where I could kind of see him more clearly. And it was like, okay, there's something wrong. There's something wrong with this guy. The energy of the relationship was very secretive, it felt like. like what would go on behind closed doors was so, it just was like so far out there that I certainly didn't want anyone to know. I was very ashamed also that of like what I was kind of becoming. And I also wanted to sort of like stand by my ridiculous choice of marrying someone that I, you know, had known for, we moved in together. I think it had been 10 days or something we had spent together, but you know, and I don't know, it felt bad. It just felt so bad. This last fight that we had, it was in our new apartment. He ended up taking all my the pain meds, and he ended up taking the whole bottle of the meds. And I remember being more annoyed that he took all my good painkillers, you know, that like, because I was still in a lot of pain. Because then we kind of decided that night to split up. And he told me, you're too stupid to leave here. You're too stupid to move out. So, and then I was like, I'll show you. You know, it was like that. And then I left that night, you know. Turns out that was a suicide attempt on his part. After the kind of divorce settlement, he still owed me money. And he, I don't know, he would keep putting it off. But then he eventually started to contact me at the beginning of the year. And saying that he had just found out that he has been bipolar since he was 17 years old, and that everything in our relationship, everything that he ever said to me, he didn't mean it, nothing was my fault, it was bipolar that was the cause of all this. At first I was like, all right, you know what, I don't buy that. You know what, because he was always kind of a drama person. For me, it was bringing up all this trauma that I had kind of chosen to ignore since then. Life has given me these opportunities that feel like the worst thing ever, but I've just learned, I learned so much through them. Like, for example, MS, I feel like that's one of my best teachers ever. I've learned so much, and And also, like, through that, this sort of, like, abusive marriage, I can see how it happens now. Like, if there's someone in an abusive relationship, I can see now how it happens and how you kind of get stuck in that pattern, and you're scared to leave, and you're scared to piss them off. And so you just kind of, I don't know, you just kind of let your own feelings go to the wayside. When my self-esteem has been that low, that's when I've made these, like, horrible choices. Like, really bad decision, poor decision-making, coming from this place of low self-esteem. If my self-esteem had been better, there's no way I would have ended up with that guy, for sure. I've made some fine mistakes in my life, and that one, that was a good one. The mistake of choosing to marry that guy. But I feel like, you know, there's not really mistakes. There's just lessons. We screw up, and that's how we find our way.